then. So the movie is called Stand With Me, and it'll be playing at 7:30 p.m. on April 9th at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Where can people find out more about this movie and about this project, Make a Stand?
And the website for it is standwithmemovie.com, and I'd like to thank Still Motion for making the movie. Oh, and I have one more thing to say.
That sure.
On the website, you can see the trailer and buy the tickets, and our website is makeastand.com.
Thank you, Vivian, for being our guest today.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser. We'll be joined a little later in the show by Andy Chandler, who will be talking about the Filmed by Bike Festival. But first, here's Jen with our guest in the studio.
Thanks, Conch. And we do have a pair of tickets to give away to the Portland premiere of Stand With Me. If you are the lucky third caller to the front desk here at KBOO, your name will be at the door on April 9th at the Hollywood Theater. The number to call is 503-231-8032. Again, the third caller at 503-231-8032. 8032 gets a pair of tickets to see Stand With Me on April 9th. And Vivian Haar, the subject of the film, will be in attendance to answer questions. Now I'm joined by the Northwest Film Center's Thomas Phillipson, who is the longstanding regional coordinator of the Student Academy Awards. He'll be presiding over the Regional One or Western U.S. Finals at the Northwest Film Center on April 23rd at 6 p.m. Narrative, documentary, animated, and experimental works by film students from regional schools will be juried and narrowed down for advancements to the national finals in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the film show, Thomas.
Thanks for inviting me, Jen.
So before we get to the regional finals that are happening in Portland next mm-hmm. month, I just want to ask about the Student Academy Awards in general. I understand that it's a branch of the Oscars, the Academy Awards. How did the student branch get started?
Well, back in, 1972, the Board of Governors of the Academy, which are, the Oscar folks that we enjoy every February or March, they got together and decided that they would like to put something together for student level filmmaking. And so they created the whole awards. They changed the name halfway through, but they have been doing this for all those years. And the Film Center here in Portland has been the regional coordinator for most of that time.
Terrific. And the website, you can visit the Student Academy Awards website to learn more. It boasts of notable past winners mm-hmm. of Academy Awards, Robert Zemeckis, Trey Parker, and my personal favorite alumnus, Spike Lee, mm-hmm. to name a few. So how does a top honor at the Student Academy Awards position a young filmmaker to embark upon his or her career, like maybe some of these other past winners who have become big filmmakers?
Well, it's really cool what when you get the national finalists that come in from the different regions, the Academy brings them down to Los Angeles for the big gala awards. But actually, more than that, they bring them down there for a whole week, and they meet with like the Cinematographers Guild, the Directors Guild. Every day they have a lunch or a dinner with everybody. And so they really get to know the industry and the Academy as well, and that really gives them a little boost. And people pay attention, I think, to those people who have won before, just because it's a pretty illustrious list. And that can only help but launch. They get some money too for winning, like few thousand dollars and stuff like that, but more than that, it's the credentials of being a Student Academy Award winner. There are a few Student Academy Award winners whose films have, the very same films, have gone on to be nominated for regular Academies, and some have won as well too. So
that's a unique and cool distinction that a young filmmaker can have.
Right? Definitely.
So you have been the Region 1 coordinator for over a decade. You've been overseeing competition on the West Coast and the Western states. Mm-hmm. What's been your role in the Student Academy Awards, and what has been the Film Center's role in the selection and jurying of these films?
Well, I'll start by telling you, I think the reason why the Film Center in Portland has been the Region 1 host, basically, is that, they could have had it in Los Angeles, where a lot of these films are coming from. Most of the entries from Region 1 come from California, the big film schools. And they could have had it down there, but then there would be too many, you know, if you had a juror pool filled with people who already worked down there, everybody would know everybody. So since the Film Center was here and established, barely established by the time this started, they reached out to us and asked if we would host it. And so ever since, all the Region 1 entries, as I say, it really is largely California. As of this date, and the entry deadline is April 1st, but as of this date, I have one entry that is not from California. It's from Idaho, and the rest, I have about 130 today until the mail comes in. I get like tons and tons. But so we receive all the entry forms and the DVDs of the work, and then I put together juries for each of the separate categories. You've got narrative, documentary, animation, and alternative. And I put together different juries filled with people that I know in the area. They might be film instructors at PSU or filmmakers in town, animators, people I think who will be good judges. And we all get together and watch all the work and come up with regional finalists initially. And then what we'll be watching on, I think it's Tuesday the 22nd, is the regional finalists, which is up to six winners in each of the categories.
Oh, great. So as someone who's seen then a good cross-selection of student film in the last decade, at least on the West Coast, I wanted to ask, are there any trends you've seen that you're particularly excited about? By which I mean, you know, for example, the rise of a particular genre or style, a type of new technical innovation, or, you know, general creativity in experimental work, anything like that?
Well, it's funny because it's really what I see is all over the map from year to year, and there are trends year to year. I do see a lot. It always surprises me to see how many of the filmmakers are doing work with a sort of foreign outlook, like outside of the United States, that are shot and take place elsewhere in the world, a real international mindset, which just surprises me since they're all coming from the Western states. There's been a lot of really great animation coming out of especially my region, the West Coast, and, you know, some of those past winners like John Lasseter, who went on to do Toy Story, or, Trey Parker with South Park and stuff like that. It's really, so animation, I think, is really strong, and as well as documentaries too, especially.
You mentioned, of course, we're coming out of the West Coast. Animation, I know, probably you get submissions from CalArts and stuff like that. I wanted to ask, just out of curiosity, is there any like East Coast, West Coast rivalry between film schools and Student Academy Awards beef, if you will?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there is or not. There's definitely a sort of professional rivalry with the regional coordinators. It's all in good fun, but it's more like we're really proud when our region's work gets through, you know.
Great. Well, when it does get through, of course, you were mentioning before, it advances to the national finals in Los Angeles. I hear you may have a funny story or two about the Board of Governors dinners.
Oh, yeah. Well, in years past, it didn't happen last year and it might not happen this year, but they used to invite the regional coordinators to Los Angeles for that a couple days while the gala's there and while all the filmmakers are there. And I used to come down on Friday, and the first thing I would do is go to the Board of Governors dinner, which is a big fancy affair. And the Board of Governors at the Academy are the different branches, like the cinematographers, the writers, the directors, and they all have their own branches and their chairs. And at the Board of Governors dinner, they always have it at the Beverly Hills Hotel, which is, you know, really swanky and cool, and that's always fun. And then they have a different table for each of the boards, and the filmmakers and I get to go from table to table at each course so that we talk to, you know, the different
like
famous people.
Famous people tables.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a salad course, and I go over to the cinematographers. Or the first year I was there, I didn't know at all what to expect, and I sat down, and they tell you, they tell the students and the coordinators that, you know, it's likely the person you're sitting next to is very famous, but you won't know their name. So it's totally cool to ask them, you know, what have you done? And the first guy I sat down next to, his name was Hal Cantor, and it said that in front of his plate. And so I asked him, so Hal Cantor, that sounds familiar to me. What did you do? And I knew he seemed kind of like he was kind of older, you know, but he said he wrote all the road pictures for Hope and Crosby.
Oh, wow.
So like way back in the 40s. And he was seated at the same table with Faye Kanin, who just died this past year, and she wrote like some Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn movies and things like that. So it's really cool to kind of meet the old guard of Hollywood.
Yeah, the old guard and the new guard.
And the new guard, side by side, yeah.
Great. Well, you know, I know that this is particular to film students, but of course we want people, you know, from all over Portland to be coming out to this screening. Why would you say that the general public should be interested in seeing student film?
Well, the caliber of the filmmaking is really, really top notch. As I say, some of these films have gone on to win Oscars in their category. And they're coming out of the big schools, and some small schools make it through now and again too. But if you have any desire to see what's coming out of you know, the leading edge of film schools these days, this is a good place. Or if you have children who are thinking about going into film school, or if you're contemplating it, it's a great way to see all that stuff. And it's just entertaining too. It's a long program. It depends on which ones win, how long the program is. It depends on how long each thing is. And you can kind of come and go from it if you need to. It starts at 6 o'clock. We start a little earlier. So if anybody can't make it that early, feel free to come in the middle of it. And you'll sit there with the jurors who are watching the films, and we will announce the national finalists at the end of the evening.
Terrific. Well, it sounds very exciting. And again, that is Tuesday, April 22nd at 6 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium.
The Witzel Auditorium inside the Portland Art Museum.
Great. Yeah. And I just want to ask, the submission deadline has actually not passed yet. So if any student filmmakers are listening, there's a piece of information for you.
April 1st is coming right up.
So what's the website where people can go to submit work or learn more about the FIS?
Just Google Student Academy Awards and you'll get right to the Academy's website.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us on the film show today, Thomas. I've been speaking with Thomas Phillipson with the Northwest Film Center, who has served as the Western Regional Coordinator for the Student Academy Awards for over a decade. They are free and open to the public on April 22nd. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Thomas.
Thanks, Jen.
And now here's Conch to tell us about Filmed by Bike, along with the festival's special guest, comedy filmmaker Andy Chandler.
Yeah, we're going to turn now to Andy Chandler, and he is a local filmmaker, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the Filmed by Bike Festival. He's in the filmmaker spotlight for Filmed by Bike, which is coming up in April. It's April 19th to 22nd, and welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
You have been kind of a local celebrity for your short film, Sandy Boulevard. Actually, it's a fake trailer for a non-existent feature film.
Right. Yeah, it's a spoof Red Band trailer. We just always thought it was a great idea to kind of self-contain a whole film within a trailer, because everything you really need to know happens in the trailer.
It's kind of a Portland in-joke, because Sandy Boulevard is a street that's been torn up and rerouted and done several different ways, but it's become just a real popular subject for discussion. So you've since become sort of the in-house filmmaker, videographer, and editor for OHSU, the Oregon Health and Sciences University. I hope they didn't mind all the F-bombs that were dropped on Sandy Boulevard.
Honestly, I don't know if they've ever seen it.
Oh, okay.
They like my work enough to hire me, so they must be comedy fans.
So what's it like to be going from making short parody films to being working for the big research institute here in Portland?
It's a little different. I used to work at KGW for a long time, so I've worked in TV, but now I'm constantly just shooting and editing and going places, meeting with people. So it's different. I don't have a lot of time to make comedy stuff. So,
yeah. Well, one of the things that you're supporting right now is Filmed by Bike, the festival here in town that's been going on for many years and has been increasingly popular. And oftentimes it's kind of a guerrilla operation. You've got a bunch of filmmakers who are kind of taking portable filmmaking to the limits.
Yeah. Yeah, and this year they have a lot of, I think it's like the majority of their submissions is international, which is kind of different.
Oh, really?
Yeah, normally they have, I think maybe like half are from Portland, but this year I think it's like 70 or 80% are from outside of, you know, Oregon or the country. So it's, they're trying to focus in on the bike thing and sort of become the number one bike festival in the world, basically. And they're doing a good job. They have a really good promotional team and outreach and stuff like that.
And it's not just footage of the World Naked Bike Ride. It's everything from documentaries to love stories to comedy to what have you.
Yeah, yeah, there's everything. I think they have, I want to say, two or three features this year. And then just tons and tons of shorts. They have three or four different unique days of programming. Different shorts every day. There's a day with just features. There's a day, a new thing they're trying called storytelling, which is, I think, just, you know, people telling live stories of what happened, you know, funny stuff on bikes in Portland.
So it's almost multimedia. There's a bit of a stage aspect, a bit of a screen aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
Participatory.
Yeah, and they usually get really kind of interactive, involved crowds to support that. So it's a great festival.
And it looks like, you know, the Travel Channel's getting involved. It seems like bike culture has really kind of blown up recently.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they're definitely trying to capitalize on that, like I was saying, and become sort of the known bike festival of the world, which is appropriate in Portland, you know. It's kind of the bike capital with some competitors in Europe, probably. But they're trying to take it a step up this year, I think, and they've done a good job.
Well, you've been around long enough to see filmmaking, video making technology go really portable to the point where, you know, there's the GoPro nowadays, there's a bunch of motion canceling technology.
Yeah.
That will make mobile cameras shoot much smoother footage, for example.
Yeah, yeah, and you see with Film My Bike, there's a lot of GoPro stuff. You know, it's so popular with like any kind of vehicle people because they're really easily attachable and there's all sorts of mounts and crazy stuff. But yeah, I mean, the footage you get off of them nowadays is, you know, it's 1080, and a lot of them can shoot, like, I think, like 90 frames a second, do some really amazing stuff. And then there's other crazy stuff like the Blackmagic Cinema Camera. I don't know if you've seen that, where it's basically like a little point-and-shoot size camera, but it shoots kind of what you'd see in the cinema. It's like 2K images. So there's all sorts of these, like, compact options available nowadays. And it just, you know, levels the playing field. It's democratizing for filmmakers. And that's what's been really exciting to me over the past few years, is seeing this kind of freedom and access been available to me and everyone else. So it's definitely exciting.
Well, the tricky part is still coming up with a good story, having good techniques, and really having a good crew to back you up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been lucky enough, too, to have access to just performers. I do a lot of work in, like, the nonprofit theater community, and they're usually, you know, they have improv skills kind of in their bones. Like, they just kind of do that all the time. So it's a different kind of way to work with performers, but it's really worked out for me. But, yeah. Yeah, and it's exciting. You know, I think it's mostly exciting for me just as an editor, because mostly what I do is, you know, I've edited for longer than anything, and most of the time, I'm using takes that I would never even think would come up and shooting. You know, it's kind of like that old, like, Robert Altman style of the magic is in the process kind of thing. And I'm a big believer in that, especially with comedy. So,
yeah, Altman was the biggest name when it comes to working with ensemble casts.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I like that idea, too. You know, you see it, I think you're seeing it in TV more now with, like, American Horror Story and stuff like that. But I'm just a huge fan of working like that. I like that way of keeping your stable of actors.
So you personally, as a filmmaker, suddenly your day job has kind of taken over, but it's giving you some new skills. So at some point, you're hoping to get back and do a little bit more comedy, do something on a large scale?
Yeah, definitely. We've been talking a lot with like the same group that I work with about making some kind of series, because a lot of these pieces that I make were for my friend's sketch comedy show, actually.
Oh, what was that?
It's called Spectravagasm. It's kind of a weird name, but it's kind of a multimedia comedy show. Like, there's real improv mixed with my comedy video scenes. So we've been thinking about, for a long time now, making that into, like, a web series or something. It's either going to be that or, you know, some other crazy trailer or... some short comedy, probably. So.
Now, you had a live screening event of this a couple of years ago at Milepost 5, right?
Yeah, that's basically why Sandy was made for that show. And then for the second one, that's when I made the Pog trailer, which is now showing next month at the FOW Film Festival.
Film Festival, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a parody festival, basically. And I hadn't heard of it until last year. And when I found out about it, I'm like, this is like perfect for me because this is all I make is like spoofs, basically. But yeah, it'll be playing there. Pogtown will be playing there April 4th. And we're happy to be part of it. So.
Yeah, so the festival is filmed by bike. It's coming up on the 19th to the 22nd of April, and it'll be at the Clinton Street Theater once again, and the information is available at filmedbybike.org. Andy Chandler, you'll be there at least one of the days, I'm hoping?
Yeah, I'm sure I will, yeah. Probably the opening. I don't know if you've ever been to the opening day, but that's always just, it's just crazy. I think they usually have a street party, which they'll probably be doing this year. They close down
26th and Clinton.
Street, yeah, right. And you can go out there and drink beer and eat food, and it's fun. So I'll probably go on that day.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing, and I'm sure that we'll see more of your work coming down the pike in the coming days and years.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll try to make it happen. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And let's go back to Jen, who's got the film calendar.
See what happens.
Gonna die.
No, you're cutting out. No one has any answers. Sandy is ridiculous.
Sandy,
come on out right here.
Sandy. Sandy.
All right, and here it is, as we said, the film calendar. Tomorrow. Start off tomorrow, March 28th, at the PDX Latin American Film Festival begins a monthly screening series at the Hollywood Theater with the Brazilian film The Clown at 7 p.m. The series will continue every fourth Friday. For a list of films, visit pdxlaff.org.
And running April 1st through the 6th at the Clinton Street Theater, the annual Faux Film Festival, as mentioned before, returns to showcase spoofs, satires, parodies, mockumentaries, and other faux films. Each night will feature a new shorts program and feature film in varying categories, with 7 and 9 p.m. screenings. For more info, visit fauxfilm.com.
On April 10th, KBOO's own screening series at the Clinton Street Theater continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Modulations, a documentary about the history of electronic music. Go to cstpdx.com for details.
Also on April 10th, at the Northwest Film Center, filmmaker Dave Hannigan presents Romantic Macabrity, a collection of his visually experimental short works with vintage horror and sci-fi influences. He'll lead a Q&A following the 7 p.m. screening and will also be teaching a DSLR workshop in June at the Film Center's School of Film. More info can be found at nwfilm.org.
From April 11th through 13th, the Hollywood Theater will host the return of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and Cthulhu-thon, featuring panels, special guests, and professional and amateur film adaptations of the works of H.P. Lovecraft, literary horror, and other weird tales. For films, showtimes, and more info, visit hplfilmfestival.com.
Also at the Hollywood Theater, on April 16th, PNCA hosts RecFest, R-E-C Fest, its annual juried festival of time-based and moving image works by PNCA students. Show starts at 7:30 p.m. Visit hollywoodtheater.org.
On April 17th and 19th, the Northwest Film Center's touring program of highlights from the 40th Northwest Filmmakers Festival makes a hometown stop at the Witzel Auditorium. The program, featuring work by regional filmmakers, will screen at 7 p.m. on Thursday, 5 p.m. on Saturday. Details can be found at nwfilm.org.
On April 21st and 23rd, Cinema Project continues its spring season with A Cinema of Mutual Respect, The Unity of All Things and Places of Pity. Screenings at the Hollywood Theater at 7 p.m. New York City filmmaker Daniel Schmidt will be in attendance to present his collaborative work with Gabriel Abrantes and Alexander Carver. For more info, visit cinemaproject.org.
On April 23rd, the Real Feminism film series continues at the Clinton Street Theater with a 7 p.m. screening of Siren Spirits. This British shorts anthology was compiled by the media arts nonprofit Women Make Movies. Learn more at cstpdx.com.
From April 24th through 26th, University of Oregon's Portland campus will host the What is Documentary Conference, hosted by U of O's School of Journalism and Communications. The conference will feature speakers, roundtables, paper presentations, and screenings of documentary work. On April 25th, the Northwest Film Center will host an 8 p.m. tribute to the documentarian and U of O alumnus James Blue as part of the conference. Much more info at journalism.uoregon.edu/what-is/documentary.
Thank you, Conch. That wraps up the film calendar and the film show. Thanks to our guests today, Vivian Hare, Thomas Phillipson, and Andy Carlson.
Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at KBOO Film Show.
Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station, KBOO.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, March 27th. I'm Kristen Yount. An Ohio state-based company, Commercial Vehicle Group, will close its Tigard facility at the end of the year, leaving 80 people without jobs. The company manufactured various interior pieces for large commercial vehicles. The Vancouver plant, operated by Commercial Vehicle Group, closed in 2009, availing 70 people of their jobs. Reasons for the closure on CVG's website include economic conditions, their ability to develop new product, risks associated with conducting business in foreign countries and currencies, and the impact of changes in governmental regulations on CVG's customers and businesses. Patrick Miller, president of the company, said, "Many of our customers serviced by our Tigard facility have transitioned their businesses to other geographic regions." Another inmate at Guantanamo Bay Prison, Ahmed Rabbani, who is never charged with a crime or assigned a trial date, will be allowed to file federal charges in court today. Rabbani joins fellow prisoner Imad Abdullah Hassan, who filed a similar charge earlier this month. Prison officials will have to answer for their brutal actions in force-feeding prisoners, and a judge will decide on the legality of the practice. A settlement was reached yesterday between Bank of America, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac for selling bad mortgages. B of A, America's second largest bank, agreed to pay out $9.3 billion to the mortgage brokers. Shareholders can expect a loss of 21 cents a share as a result. Former CEO settled out on a different lawsuit levied by New York State Attorney General's office because he misled investors. Kenneth Lewis can't be a CEO for 3 years, and the Bank of America agreed to adopt corporate reforms. Lewis will pay a modest sum to cover the cost of the state's investigation. Near Coos Bay, liquid natural gas, or LNG developers, have begun to raise the funds needed to start building the Jordan Cove LNG plant. The Canadian company Veresen Inc. anteed up the first $250 million to begin. The United States Department of Energy authorized the project, claiming that opponents were unable to demonstrate that building the plant is not in the general public interest. However, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has yet to sign off on it. The LNG plant is to export 1.8 billion cubic feet of natural gas, presumably from fracking, in liquid form to Asian countries. The price tag of the LNG plant is well over $7 billion. Ron Wyden and associated union groups have backed the DOE decision because of the thousands of construction jobs building the plant will create. That's going to do it for the KBOO News Today at Noon. Please tune in every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news brought to you by dedicated volunteers from our Southeast Portland studios.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible in part by a grant from Regis Caribbean and John John Promotions, presenting dancehall artist Beanie Man live in Portland at the Tau Center, 631 Northeast Grand Avenue, April 7th. Doors at 8, show at 10. Tickets available at the Caribbean Spice Market, 4516 Northeast 42nd Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-915-8335. Welcome to Shocks of Sheba. What's the leader?